Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Phil Wickham.
You have still got it.
Thank you.
You still got it.
You know what else I have?
What?
And still have?
What?
A love for a good podcast.
Oh, yeah. I know that.
You know what I mean?
I know that about you.
I've been listening to the Matthew West podcast, and I'll tell you this, Dave, to use a sports reference, it's a winner.
Wow. John, and I'm going to tell you something else.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
Thank you.
I love it.
You know, as a fellow Hoosier,
look at you.
To use another sports reference.
Yeah.
Is that a sports reference?
It kind of can be. Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoy listening to him talk to Cody Zeller, NBA star.
It's good that you recognize your common thread with Cody, because mm-hmm. I've been saying that. I'll yell it across the street to you. I'm like, you and Cody Zeller are so similar. Okay?
I didn't know what you were saying there, but now I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've been saying that for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
And now I get
well, and just to bring it back up, the actual similarity is actually not your basketball skills. It is home state. And that's where that feels heavy.
But hey, don't doubt my jumper,
Dave. Never do.
Okay?
I'll go out in the
driveway right now and show it to you. Huh? I'll put you in a world of pain from behind the three-point line.
Yeah.
And that is the first time I've ever said that phrase.
It's so convincing, though. Join Matthew as he not only shares the story God is writing in his own life, but the stories of some of his favorite friends, artists, authors, athletes, and influencers, such as Mark Hall from Casting Crowns, best-selling author and also Dadville alumni, Max mm-hmm. Lucado, Sadie and Corey Robertson, best-selling author and speaker John Gordon, and many, many more.
In addition, Dave, each week, listeners will be taken behind the scenes into Matthew's studio, Story House, that's the name, to experience some of the powerful stories behind his music. New episodes are released every Wednesday, so be sure to listen and subscribe to the Matthew West podcast today.
Phil, how in the heck fire are you doing?
Thanks for having me on and wanting to talk to me. It's kind of you guys. I'm honored to be a part of it. I'm serious.
Hey, can we start off? Oh, go ahead. You were about to say something nice about us, I feel like.
So. Oh, yeah.
I don't want to cut you off.
I'm a fan of both you guys from a distance, and I think both of you are crazy talented. Every time either of your names come up, people smile and have a good thing to say, and I've always thought, man, it'd be cool to hang, so this is awesome.
Oh, that's really nice.
I feel like coming in hot, but I want to say this may be my favorite episode ever.
Already?
Way it started.
So far, this is top two.
This is top two easy.
How many of you
Phil,
guys?
We are thrilled to have you on. What is this, John? It's 100.
This is like 140-ish.
Yeah.
I think. A lot. Yeah. That feels like a lot to me. What I was going to say is you, Phil, have the rare combination of great hair, which a lot of people who have great hair, you never see a hat on the head, right? But you also look great in a hat. You're also like, right? You're the dual hat guy. And some people who wear hats a lot, you see them and you're like, you're not a hat guy. I can just tell you're not a hat guy. You shouldn't wear hats.
But yeah.
Well, I'm getting pretty, if I don't keep up on the trim on the side, like I'm definitely showing that I'm almost 40 years old. So I start wearing a hat, which is probably cool though. Way too self-conscious. But
whenever I see a commercial where the guy like has gray and they color it, I'm always like, no, he looked cooler when it was like salt and pepper.
Yeah, it's actually very true. I agree with that too. But I appreciate your kind words about hat and hair. Now I've taken the hat off. I actually kind of feel...
Phil, you know this more than John and I do. I mean, especially with this tour that you just got done with, like, you're not dealing with people who are watching you, like, from the crowd or, you know, and you're like, they probably can't see it. You're dealing with, like, Mondo Dome, you know, like the Enormo Dome high-def screens on either side. And so it is like they are, you know, they are seeing every which about of your face and hair, and so that's a different level than me. Like, that guy can't see; he's like 10 feet away. I'm good, you know.
Yeah,
they're pulling in. They can tell what emotion you're feeling.
I would need to have a conversation with like the head of lighting and the camera guys, because I would be like, look, It's all fine. All of this front of the face is fine. If you get back here into like the crown of my head area, we need to go straight to the lyrics. If you see the camera go in there, cut to the lyrics. We can't let the people see.
You know what? I have to always. I'm a little bit serious answer, but I need to keep reminding myself, like, the less you care, you truly care about that, and the more you just freaking be yourself, be normal, be cool, the better the night's gonna go. The louder people are gonna sing, the more people are gonna walk away feeling like you gave them something. You gave them not just like a thing, you know, not just a product, but yourself. And so, that's why, let's go kill it.
Let's get in there.
And that's why God has given you the gift of that hair, because God's like, you know what? He gets it. He has the right mindset. So let's reward him with some heavenly hair.
Yes. Guys are too kind, man. I'm getting a haircut tomorrow, actually. But
I want you to go into your day, Phil, just feeling.
I feel
follically encouraged.
Very encouraged. I truly do. Thank you. Because honestly,
you're just starting your day, right? You're in San Diego.
I'm just starting my day, but on that tour, I was out with the guy with probably the best hair in all of
Brandon
Christian and gospel music. He's just got the main.
It's like Samson level.
It is. He is Samson. He's the modern day worship Samson, and like so going out with him
worship
and for him, it always just looks so awesome. And then like he'll come out the next day, and it's just like he's got it all braided, and he looks like he's just so bad to the bone, you know, and then the next day he's got it all flowing out of a hat. I'm like, bro, I can't keep up.
Did you guys, as a tour prank, talk about maybe cutting all his hair off in his sleep?
No, I would never dream of it.
He gets up and he can't sing.
He doesn't even have the strength to hold the mic.
Can you imagine? I actually think it doesn't just strengthen him, it strengthens everybody on the stage. Every time that thing whips around and you get a little bit, you're in the splash zone a little bit, you know, you got a little bit of the glory splash from the locks.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I can see it when he goes back to the drummer just, gets another level when that hair starts whipping. It's amazing.
That's true.
That is incredible. That makes me laugh.
Brandon
he's
a battery for other people, you know, just his energy that he brings around and what he'll come into the room before the night and just say like what God has on his heart or what he's like feeling for the night. Like he's just definitely got a gift to lead, you know, lead with contagious, just passion, you know? And I love him. He's a brother. But that tour was it was my favorite tour I've ever done.
Well, so let's tell the people what we're doing, because everybody right now they're having so much fun, but they're like, what's happening? So everybody today, we have Phil Wickham with us all the way from San Diego, which is early there, and that's why we appreciate him. He's just given up some of his life, some of his time, to be with us. So Phil, we do a little bit of the brag sheet every time. So here's a little bit about This Is Your Life. Released 10 studio albums, 4 live albums, 2 Christmas albums. His single, This Is Amazing Grace, is certified platinum and topped the Christian Airplay chart, nominated for 16 Dove Awards. Good gracious.
Jeez.
Won in 2019 for Worship Recorded Song of the Year, 2022 for Songwriter of the Year and Artist, and 2022 for Worship Album of the Year and Worship Recorded Song of the Year, nominated for 2 Grammys, but been out this year with Brandon Lake on the Summer Worship Nights, which I heard was super duper awesome, and we're hearing about the power of Brandon's hair and the way it encourages people and challenges them at the same time. Fun facts, which I love these. Our producer always throws these in there. Parents were both members of Parable, which I did a deep dive on this morning, which was unbelievably, every click, I just got deeper and deeper, which was like, God, what a fun fact. And I actually want to talk about that a little bit. But and began leading worship at 13. Is that true?
It's true, yeah. I grew up in a house. My parents have been leading worship as long as I've been alive. So it felt normal. It wasn't like this weird thing in my mind for me as a 12, 13-year-old kid to learn guitar by singing worship songs. And then got shoved on stage by a youth pastor who was doing his job, giving kids a chance to be on stage. And I fell in love with Jesus out. And it wasn't just like my parents are Christian, so I'm Christian. But God used these worship songs to connect my heart to his.
Oh, wow.
That's probably why I've been doing it ever since. I fell in love with those moments of people just singing to him. And I remember as a 14-year-old kid just being up at summer camp and kids coming to Jesus and getting baptized and singing these songs over them, just thinking, "My God, I'm here. Every time you want me to be, I'll say yes, because this is too awesome." And
wow.
So
the first time that you actually.
John, I don't want to dive in yet because we're going to encourage. I need to bring in two really hot takes real quick before we jump in, because John is eager, as you can tell, Phil. But I have to say this, Phil. I told John, I really think you may have, in my opinion, like top 10, I'll even give you 20 voices of people singing right now. I'm not kidding. I think your voice, I hear you sing, and it becomes a struggle for me. I'm not kidding. Like, I remember your first album with Divine Romance, and I heard that song, and I was like, I don't know about this, man. Like, I remember I had, like, a moment in my car. I was like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, this song is so good, and even more frustrating, this guy's voice is out of this freaking world. And so it is, I mean, I love what you do. But I think your ability to sing is so insanely good. It is like really intimidating. And it's why I'm glad we've actually like never sat in a room together.
Because what? I'd be
like, why don't you sing it? Why don't you sing it? No, sing a little more. That's good. I like how you sing it.
Okay.
I just give you my catalog. I just be like, here's all my music. You should sing that too.
Dude.
But it's really, I mean, you are such a insanely gifted dude. It's fun to see you doing what you do, because I think, you know, one of the things that's so funny about that too is like when you hear someone that can do what you do early on, I'm like, man, I hope this cuts through. Like, I hope that Phil's one of those guys that gets a chance. So knowing, you know, and even more so knowing that you and Brandon were doing what you're doing, I'm like, his voice needs to be heard in venues like that. Like, it's one of the, you know, and that's not true of everybody's voice, but you just have such an incredibly.
Okay. Well, I'll cut you off there.
And that's why I've got a couple of songs I want to send you and just see how you sound. You know, see if they stick.
Oh,
no, but you
seriously,
really are so gifted.
Are you kidding me, man?
It's really substantial.
That's one thing coming from like some media publicist guy that's trying to write an article, but that coming from you is crazy. So, I
mean it, dude.
Thank you.
I mean it. I mean
thank
it.
Thank you.
It's substantial.
What do you? I'm always curious with musicians who are, you know, who play an instrument, write, and sing, maybe produce all these different categories of what we do. When someone compliments you as a singer, how does that hit you? Are you like, because I have my own little hierarchy of compliments. Funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if someone's like.
That's an
man,
interesting question.
You're a great singer, or like, man, you're a great piano player, or whatever. Like, where is singing on that list? Are you like, well, really, I would love for somebody to say I'm a great guitar player.
I'm so glad you asked.
That's
that,
actually
man.
A
that's
great question, and only question someone like us would ask, right? And I would say I probably in a hierarchy of how I actually rate myself in these things, you know, like, in which. You know, there's definitely things that there was things that Brandon Lake would do every night that I'm like, man, I can't do that vocally. Like the little falsetto riffs. I'm like, I wouldn't hit all those notes as solid as he is. Like he's a great singer too. And then I'm on stage. Like I remember being, I sang a song with Chandler Moore and I was with the Mav City crew a couple years ago. And like, that's just a different thing that I'm like, I just have to remember I do a thing and I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to sing the song because there's stuff happening that spontaneously that my brain would never go to. And it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And so I think as I've grown more and been in more situations, the talent level has gotten so high. And usually that means a talent level of singing, you know? Because I know I'm not as good as the lead guitar player on stage. I'll never play drums like this guy. I'll never play bass like this guy. I'm a really solid rhythm guitar guy. Like, I actually get a lot. I'm going to say this out loud. I get a lot of compliments from producers saying like, "Wow, you strum on the click really well."
Oh, don't you love that?
Yeah, actually, I've worked 18 years to strum on the click. You know, a good G chord. So, I feel really solid about like you want me to be in the pocket with a guitar playing a G chord. I can do that.
Yeah.
singing is up there, but for me, it's like I would say writing songs just specifically for the church would be like my is the highest compliment of like, hey, like I really connect with your songs, and I for some reason I make up my own for some reason your songs are the easiest yeah. to make my own to sing to Jesus. That's like for me the biggest compliment. But also,
you know what? And I want to say this. I was just going to say, you know, quickly, Phil. I think it's so worth circling what you just said. And I'm going to forget to talk about it if you keep talking because my brain's like a 5-year-old monkey.
Mine too.
I think something that was so cool for me to learn as a songwriter and artist really early in my career, because when I started writing songs, and I think John probably feels this way too to some degree, like I just couldn't, like, as much as I knew CCM, and when I was coming up, I'm 45 now, but when I was coming up, it was the heyday of CCM. Like, that my, like, late high school, college careers were just, like, you know, as a genre, it was just, like, really popping off. You know, to DT Talk, Audio Adrenaline, Chris Rice, all the stuff, it was just really exploding. And so I really thought, I got to do this. Like, I'm a Christian. I'm starting to write songs. And I'm telling you, I couldn't do it. Like, I would sit to write songs and everything would come out this other way. You know, they'd be love songs or be like some other thing. But it was just like, anytime I tried to make them gospel centric in that way, it just wouldn't work. And it was so contrite and it was so contrived. And so when I got to Nashville, you know, meeting Brandon Heath was such a joy in so many ways. And I knew him in college and we went to school together. But he was one of the first people I talked to. He was like, no, man, like, that's what I want. Like, that's what comes out of me. Because I thought, is this something that people actually have a passion for too? Or are they kind of like doing it because they sort of feel like they have to? And it was such a cool thing for me to get around people, and still to this day, who that is the natural outpouring for them, because it is not for me. Like, if you give me a guitar or piano, it's 1 out of 100 songs is going to be what you said so well, like a song for the church or to sort of be a more worshipful moment. It's just not the way I'm built. And so it's been such a joy. And I love hearing you say that, because I think people need to hear that. It's like, God, it's so fascinating to me the way that he makes songwriters, because it's not a choice, I think, a lot of times. It's the way God makes us and the wiring we have. And sort of when you put all the stuff in the music and everything in our heads, it pops out this way. And I love that the church can celebrate both those things, you know, that they can have places for me and John and guys who are in girls and bands who are doing who are believers, but the way that the world and music comes out of them is this way. And then people like you and Brandon and, you know, my other friends who are in that space who do it, it comes out that way. That fascinates me still. Even as old as I am, I'm like, I just love that. I love that it's not sort of like, if you were a Christian, you should 100%. Do or whatever, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I love there's outlets now that exist that didn't exist back then too, right? Like, it's like there's only one way to be a Christian artist in 1992. And because no one played worship music. They play this kind of music.
Right, right.
And there's no other real way for you to get heard. Like, MySpace wasn't even around yet. You know what I mean? Like, so you had to do a thing, or else you either were like, I'm going to write songs that fit into this little formula, or I'm just going to go do something to fall on mainstream, or, you know. Right. So it's so cool. There's outlets now for it to happen. You just post a reel of a chorus and people, if it's good, people will share it. You know what I mean? On Instagram and all of a sudden 500 people are showing up at your shows. It was amazing, you know? And also think back then too, and maybe this is just my upbringing, but I wonder if you guys can relate. John, did you grow up going to church too? Or are you like church kid?
I did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Cause I growing up like a 90s youth group guy, like, maybe it was just my specific church, but there was definitely more like black and white. This is wrong. This is right. Not just like, this is what I forget how you put it, but like, this is what I feel like I should do. Not just that, but also like, this is the Christian thing to do. Or like, I'm not allowed to chase that dream of being U2 number two or whatever, or the next
cult. Yeah.
Like, I am, but I'm going to get looked down a little bit on by like the older generation in my church that I'm like actually playing at bars and clubs. Like, there's that sense. And I think that still exists probably to some degree, but I think that's really broken down a lot too. And people are just like, man, make beautiful stuff, full of truth, carry the light of Jesus. And maybe that's just a change in my heart and some liberation that I've seen in my own self over the last 20 years. But I think it exists in a much bigger way, which is so beautiful, just to reiterate your point.
Yeah.
On that thought, growing up, when your parents having the background that Dave mentioned earlier, that they were in Parable? Yeah, Parable.
Yeah.
So they grew up playing music and are in their young adult life or whatever. Like, so music was, I'm guessing, just like everywhere in the house. Yeah. Like, how did they feel about you playing music and did you feel that pressure from them to stay within the church?
Really quick. So my parents both got saved. My dad was 15. My mom was 20. At that whole,
oh, wow.
There's a recent movie that came out that called, it's called Jesus Revolution. And it's about Chuck Smith and Lonnie Frisbee and the beginning of this Jesus people. Anyways, Lonnie Frisbee led both of my parents to the Lord in that tent, in that time.
So
they're fully from that. Like, they got baptized in that little cove that's in the movie. You know, actually, I did too, by my dad when I was 8. So that's like my
holy cow.
That's my parents', you know, history. And Chuck Smith, that church, Calvary Chapel, that's in that movie. My dad was a worship leader there for the first 14 years of my life. So I grew up there.
Louise.
So watching, I actually got to take my parents to an early screening with Greg Laurie, who is he's now in his late 60s, but he's the kid in the movie, you know, who's now become kind of a friend and a mentor. And I got to take my parents and with him and a few other people that were there in the moment to this little theater in Newport Beach and got to see it before it came out. And it was amazing to be in that room. All that being said, so that's my upbringing. My parents just radically being saved out of the world, playing in bars, playing Jimi Hendrix riffs, and then all of a sudden finding Jesus and wanting to play for him. And that's why Parable was born, is all these young hippies found Jesus and want to tell people about him. And that's how all those bands were born, Parable, The Way, and there's the Love Song, and there's other ones. And so my parents were traveling around singing about Jesus because Jesus changed their life. And that's how they fell in love on this band. They get married. I'm born. We moved to San Diego, and I'm growing up there. And so I kind of knew some chords my whole life growing up. But when we moved to San Diego when I was 12, I had a summer vacation with nothing to do. My dad said, hey, if you want a guitar, I'll give you my old Beater one. But you have to promise you learn how to play it. And I thought, that's cool. And so, yeah, never any pressure. From them to learn, never any pressure for them to lead worship. But music was just always around. And then, like I said earlier, I playing guitar in my room, and the only songs I really knew were these worship songs that we would sing in church, you know, Lord, I lift your name on high. And he is exalted. Yeah. The King is exalted on high. I will praise. Do you remember that one? I don't know if
you can
that.
Sing like that at 9 a.m. is just whatever. Place. I'm coming back, Phil. I'm coming back. It's okay. It's okay.
And, so wait, real quick, can I ask?
Yes.
Because you're like a 12-year-old kid around this point in the story, yes. Yeah? And your parents, worship music is like the equivalent of like nuclear medicine when I was growing up. My dad, that's what he does for a living. So at 12... generally, it's like whatever your parents do for a living is like the least cool thing in the world, whatever it is. They could be an actor, they could be a movie star, whatever. It's like not cool if you're, you know, preteen or whatever. Is that how you felt about music?
No, I think I was always proud of what my parents did. I liked, you know, because in my idea, we, you know, the church we went to is Thrive. Well, it was Calvary Chapel in Costa Mesa. Mm. Was like this thriving 4 services on Sundays. 15,000 people coming through on a weekend.
Oh my God.
That kind of like just lots of like people getting saved, lots of stuff. Just the Lord, I mean, it still is, but the Lord was really moving through that church and through that family churches of Calvary Chapel. And then I just had a sense as my parents would like trap, I'd like follow, go with them to other churches to like, you know, as they would be guest worship leaders and stuff like that. And my parents like put an album out during the time I can remember. That really connected in our family of churches too. And so I could see the specialness. I could sense that this was that people were engaged and touched by it. And I think that was the biggest thing. It was not me seeing my parents on stage, but like there's all the, hey, are you John and Lisa Wickham? You know, it's like, hey, thank you so much for leading at church. And it's really the touch. So all those little moments of like, oh, this is like a thing that God is using and this is real. And then my parents, you know, no one's perfect, but they really were and still are really faithful in their walks with the Lord. I have many memories of seeing my dad with the Bible open in the morning and on his lap in a chair, you know, and my mom just saying, well, let's pray about it was such a normal thing, you know, like it's just having the Lord a part of our life was very normal. And again, because they were so radically saved and they carrying this thing that happened in the 1970s with them still to this day. In their hearts. And so So then I didn't think it was like the coolest thing in the world, but I also didn't want to run away from it. I just thought this is important. And I had a sense, when I was playing guitar in my room, singing like I Could Sing of Your Love Forever. And these songs is really when by myself in the loneliness of that summer, moving from Orange County to San Diego, God really met me. And in that moment, not like one day, but in that summer, I started a relationship with Jesus. And I kind of realized it was more than like what my parents do on stage, more than like the Lord just kind of opened my heart to say, like, I want to know you, and I'm letting, and I know you, and I want you to know me. And it was through these songs. And I think that's from a very early age, I just fell in love with these songs that other people wrote to give me my first idea of what it meant to pray to God on my own, you know, and to love God on my own has now been, I think that is carried on in my heart. Why I said earlier, it's like such a joy. And that's why I put it this way. It's such a joy to write new melodies and music that light people's hearts up, that don't just think, wow, this is good music and this is inspiring. But like, there's this special thing that when you write songs to God, and God gives you the gifting and ability to do it and opens the door. When you write songs to God that other people take in, it's like, it's not just, I like Phil's music. It's like, this is not, like people make it their own music, their own prayer, you know? Which is wild. And an ever expanding amount of sense of responsibility and honor comes with that in my heart. And as I grew up more and more too, went through experiences and realized what God had put inside of me to do, what God put inside my heart to connect with, not because I'm super holy or not because I'm a great Christian music guy, but just because it's like what you said, he put inside of me to do. It's just, I realized I try to write this EDM song and I'm like, you know what? I just like want to write, but ultimately I really just want people to sing to Jesus, or try to write this love song and go up and get some sync hits with a guy in LA I know or whatever. It's like, that was fun. But let me get back to what I love to do. You know, it just is.
Yeah,
I've almost tried to do other stuff, and it's just ultimately like, man, this. I just want to get back to what I do. You know.
Dave. That was really good.
That was
top five of all time.
This is a co-write right now.
You saw me mow my yard this weekend, John.
Yeah, I saw the whole thing.
And you probably
I canceled a coffee date just to sit there and watch you.
It's my calves, isn't it? It is. Just say yes. I need it right now. You saw me murmuring to myself, I'm sure, talking to myself. Do you know what I kept saying over and over?
Ordinary. Yeah.
Knockaround is the original affordable sunglasses company offering quality shades that won't break the bank.
That's exactly what I thought you were saying.
I couldn't get them out of my head, John. I couldn't do it.
Knockaround has so many different color combinations, and they have 17 unique frame styles, Dave. Did you know that? So if my math is correct, if you put those together, it's like 500 billion different combinations that you can do. I don't know if that's actually correct, but they're offered with both standard UV 400 protection and polarized lenses.
You're about to forget this, so I'm going to say not to. Knockaround also has kid-sized sunglasses.
I would never forget that, Dave. Okay. And check this out, because you don't even know this, but I'm about to drop some knowledge on you. You can customize your own pair of sunglasses on knockaround.com.
I did know that.
You did know that,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can choose the color of each arm, the frame, the lenses. It's all customized.
I don't know why I'm asking this, but I do want to know. Did you design your own pair?
Dave, I didn't have to.
Oh.
I found the perfect pair for my taste. The Songbird style in piano black.
Songbirds, because you're a singer, and that's piano black, because you play the piano. John, I get it. It actually makes sense.
Yeah, it's like they know me. Mm. So how can our listeners find their favorite pair?
Here's what you do.
Sorry. That's my question.
I got excited. I just jumped. Okay, so can I tell you now?
Wait till I'm done. Okay, go ahead.
Here's what you do. Since you're a loyal Dadville listener, you can head on over to knockaround.com and use promo code DADVILLE15 anytime for 15% off your order.
That's amazing.
Thanks.
So all they have to do is they just go to knockaround.com and just use the promo code DADVILLE15, that's DADVILLE15, for 15% off their order of an awesome new pair of sunglasses. Is that what you're telling me?
John, that's all I'm asking you to do.
It's too good to be true.
Guys, let's get some of them things on your face today. John, would you talk to him?
Dave?
Yeah.
If you'll let me talk, I will.
Okay, sorry.
Please don't interrupt me, because what I'm about to say is so important.
Give it to him.
Okay?
Yep.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready. Are you ready?
I wasn't.
Here we go.
Right now.
Okay. Again, please don't interrupt. Guys, fall is all about back to school and back to routine checklists. And the most important task on that checklist, Dave, should be securing your family's financial future. I knew you knew where I was going. Mm-hmm. Starting with life insurance. Now, Dave, Fabric by Gerber Life makes it quick and easy and affordable to protect your family so you can get back to enjoying your life.
Yes, knowing that you and your family are covered by a great life insurance policy is an incredible relief, and Fabric is an awesome way to go.
That's right. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high-quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Get your personalized quote in just minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on whose schedule? Your schedule.
That's right. You could go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. With over 1,700 five-star reviews, they're rated as excellent on Trustpilot.
But Dave, Fabric has more than just life insurance. Their easy digital platform also lets you create wills, access college savings funds, and manage your family's finances right from your phone, so your family is prepared for anything.
Fabric has partnered with Gerber Life, trusted by millions of families like yours for over 50 years. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in just minutes at meetfabric.com/dadville.
That's meetfabric.com/dadville. M-E-E-T fabric.com/dadville. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Assurance Company. Not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions.
Man.
Dave,
Louise. Yeah.
I want to give a shout out. Yeah. And when I give a shout out, I always laugh because it just brings me so much joy to give a shout out to Claritin.
Yes.
For supporting this episode and providing us with free samples.
You know it, John. This time of year, my allergies are in fuego. They're always on the attack, but I use this and you should too.
Oh, I do, Dave. Every day in our house.
Yeah.
Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
Designed for serious allergy sufferers, which is, me raising my hand, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill to relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better.
This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
John, I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for a long time, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can go for a run without my eyes watering. I may be crying, but it's not
sure,
from allergies.
Totally different.
And I can sing without feeling like I have like a big old, let's not even call it a frog. It's like a toad.
It's like a family of toads.
It's a family. It's a turtle.
Yeah.
In my throat.
So you ready to live life as if you don't have allergies?
Yeah, me.
It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Have you ever had the moment, you know, where maybe your parents come to a show and, you know, you're chatting backstage afterward or whatever, and, you know, dad's like, "That was great. You guys, the band sounded great. You know, a couple notes. I noticed that, you know."
Oh, yeah.
He's got years and years and years. He's been doing this for a lot longer than you have.
My dad almost always has a couple notes, which is awesome.
No, that's hysterical.
You like, "Yeah, I want to hear the notes"? Or are you like, "Dad, just pat me on the back and, you know, let's go to dinner"?
He's not. And my dad is, if you met him, he's so sweet and humble and meek, and he's still leading worship and leading teams for a reason at almost 70 years old, because he's just so trusted and full of integrity and meets people right where they're at. All that being said, he's not afraid to be like, "That was weird this moment. I think that's a weird," or that, like, "Hey, like, I'll have, I just sent him a new song that I'm going to be releasing for Christmas. Like, we're getting it mixed right now," but it was right before it was getting mixed. I'm like, "Check out this new song, because I think it's awesome. And I think it's really Christmassy, but people can sing it." And he's like, "That bridge," like, you know, he's like, he calls me. He's like, "I don't know, Phil, like, that bridge, just, it's kind of a mouth. Like, I don't know. I just don't, don't want to sing it. You know, I feel like other people feel the same way." He's like, very honest.
God, you hurt his feelings. Phil is so mad.
That was personal. He left. That was
John has done something that has never happened in Dabo before. He said something too personal, and Phil said, you know what?
I knew it was a minefield.
What is the one thing I told you not to talk about, John? Literally, the one thing is his dad critical?
His dad. Don't bring
up. I said, if you bring this up, what is the one thing every PR person says about Phil? Don't bring up his dad's criticism.
Don't bring his dad up. Yeah.
About Christmas songs.
I know. I couldn't remember if you said bring it up or not bring it up. Those situations, I always go with bring it up.
Phil is headed to the beach right now with a surfboard. So mad at us. He's not coming back.
What do you think he would say right now if we asked him another question?
Just practice some questions on that.
And Phil, what does your mom say? Go ahead, Phil.
Phil, go ahead. Your mom in music, is that? Go ahead.
So,
Phil?
Okay.
Do you have a thought about that? Does your mom have critiques of your dad? So does your mom have
a better dad, you or your dad?
Does your mom have critiques of your dad's critiques? Because that could even things out. You know, because if he says that, but she's like, I kind of liked it, you know, you may be back at zero again.
Now, what your father just said was very offensive, but the way he said it was
here I come.
Perfectly delivered.
Phil, he didn't mean that. We are so sorry.
I am so sorry, Phil.
I told him, don't ask about the dad and the Christmas songs.
Obviously.
Phil's going to disappear on us.
Yeah.
That's so, so funny. Anyways, I'm glad it cut me off because I was making the story too long. But my dad, I went back and listened to it. And the reason why I hated it is because when he said it, I knew in my heart, like, I could have written a better bridge.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And then, you know what I did? Is I rewrote it. And I re-sang it, and that night I got up after I put my kids to bed. I got up in this room right here, my little studio, and I re-sang it, and I sent it to the producer. He's like, "This is better." I was like, "I know, my dad challenged it."
Dad was right again.
That was one recent time where I was like, "No, I just I didn't think I had time to fix it," you know. Mm-hmm. But I've come to really, really love his critique because I would say 70%, he's always honest, which is awesome. And 70% of the time, I actually think he's right. And then 30% of the time, it's fun to have that relationship with your dad. It's like, Dad, I know I already got it right. You're not right on this. You know, that's kind of where we are right now. I know, I feel so strong on this. But yeah, he often has notes.
I can't imagine, like, I'm sitting here thinking as you're talking about them, like, what would it be like to have a parent that has done music and is in music? Because I can't think of anything that is more vulnerable in me than someone critiquing my songs. And I mean, Phil, as you know, and I know John knows too, like when you work with producers, you know, especially early on, I had this conversation with a new artist literally 2 days ago. There's nothing that's more helpful than good song people. Nothing. Because they can hear it and go, hey, I mean, Ed Cash was this for albums for me. Like I'd bring in a bunch of songs to Ed and he'd be like, all right. Like I'd come in with 15 and I'm like, might want to strap yourself in, my man, because this is the new Thriller. And he'd be like, all right, let's listen to some songs. And, you know, it never failed that he'd go, okay, these four are awesome. This one needs a tweak on the chorus and the rest I wouldn't record. And it would be like, what? You know, but just like you, Phil, you'd leave and you'd kind of go like, you know, he's probably right. You know what I mean? But that is a guy who I could leave. And though Ed is one of my best friends, you know, it was like, wasn't my dad. I can't imagine like my dad being like, so I listen to some of his stuff. Third song's too slow. And a lot of major sevens on these songs, Dave. I don't think that's our vibe with this record. I mean, I just think it would be like, there's no safe place to go at that point. You know what I mean?
That's funny. Well, I need to say then too, that I do feel like my mom and my dad are my biggest cheerleaders as well.
Yeah.
And for every critique, there's 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
blessed by this. So blessed by that. And that's not like, I don't feel like it's form. It's not like I got to go compliment Phil before I tell. I expect more of like, this is so special. I can't wait for people to sing this.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But which makes the critiques of like it sounds too high for your voice or something. Like it makes it way more powerful.
That's such
you know?
A great specific critique.
Yeah.
It sounds too high for your voice.
it's a gift to have that though, because you don't have to worry about some like secondary motivation for the critique. You know what I mean?
Well, it's the critiques
are really specific. That's what's cool too. It's not like this broad, like I don't know.
Yeah,
I just can't put my
finger. Yeah,
it doesn't feel as good as it's like really specific, which is helpful and also comedic.
Sounds too happy. Your voice is just such great code. It's like code for so many things.
Code like, for like, you need to re-sing this vocal.
Yeah.
Or it's just a bad song.
Sounds a little too high for... okay, thanks, Dad. I'll just scrap that whole idea.
Thanks, Dad.
That was a song cycle that I wrote a whole album to, but let's just scrap it because it's too high for my voice. You know, one of the things that I think is so cool about what you do and what Brandon and a lot of the community that you're in does is, you know, you it is such a different in my brain, and this may... You can rebuke me here, but like, you know, where John and I would write songs, there's sort of certain criteria in my brain for what I'm doing. It's very different, I would imagine, than some of what you're going through, because you said it so well and enunciated earlier. Like, you know, you're going, I can't wait to hear people sing this. And while that does matter to me, it's not quite as important as other things are, because it's not a commute. You know, I'm not writing songs to be sung by hundreds and thousands of people. You know what I mean? Like, I hope they do, but that's not really the center thing I'm shooting for. And so it's got to be interesting as you're writing, because it really is about some sort of distillation in a way of like, okay, this has really got to be understandable and palatable and singable. You know what I mean? Which is, I can't imagine having those as a grid. It would just be such a different thing for me. You know what I mean? Than
yep.
You know, and so as you said that earlier, I was like, what a beautiful way to put that, because that would be a really interesting... One of the things that I did last year, this new record I'm putting out, I listened to Beatles for a year. And that's all I listen to. But oddly enough, it's kind of what they did. And so I would do this thing, and I wonder if you have to, if you do this too with your kids, but I would get in my car, because I realized that taking the kids to school every day, I would just listen to Beatles songs. And I was always amazed at how quickly they would take them on. Like the kids, it was like immediate. And so as I would write songs, I would sneak them in. So I'd be like, okay, cool. Let's just one of Daddy's new songs. And it would just be like, you know, the song would end and the moment was, oh God, are they going to sing it? Because I felt like that's one of the Beatles' tricks, is that you just sing them. And every now and then they would. And it became this hysterical, like, litmus paper, you know, test, where I'd be like, all right, now if I turn the music off for the last 3 minutes before we get to school and they're singing my chorus, like, boom. Like, it's nailed it. I mean, do you have, like, a little trick with that, with these songs? Like, be it your wife or your parents or your kids? Because, you know, you're writing choruses especially, and I mean, obviously the verses, but, you know, they need to be singable. They need to be palatable to huge groups of people. Is there some way that you sort of proof that stuff?
Yes and no. I think by this time, it's the stuff... I used to think write for church, and what can I imagine in church? What will bands be able to play at churches? And and that's sometimes the thought in some songs. But it's really has gotten now to a point of like, okay, I know what I do and I know who I am. I know the kind of things I like to carry. And I have a friend, his mantra has kind of become mine in a way. He always says, write for your phone first, Phil.
Oh, wow.
Because I'll get in my head and I'll be like, I don't know if people will sing this, or maybe this is like a little too high and too low. Like, maybe we should simplify. And he's like, man, write for your phone, because that's what always ends up winning. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and that means write for the things you can't stop. Like, you're on a run and you press, it's on your Dropbox and you press play again. And then you're in the car and you press play and you're like, wife, check it out. And you're looking, you're showing people on, you're pressing the voice memo. And you're like, check this new idea out. And I find anytime I'm excited about that, I think usually, you know, and then I wrap my instincts that I've been doing for the last 20 years of leading worship. I wrap that up into songs, and that just kind of comes out naturally of like, I think this will work in a room. I think it won't. I'm not always right. So that kind of gets weaved in just naturally. But really it's like, what's the stuff that I'm just jumping up and down? Like, can't wait to press play in the kitchen well with my wife, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, just, so instead of getting in the weeds of like, man, I don't know if every Baptist church is like this, or you know, like getting super specific, like charismatics will like this, but I don't know about, you know, the Reformed.
Yeah, that's great. That's so good.
And just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a song I have, which hasn't like, it's not a song I thought would ever like take off, because it's kind of Easter specific, but it's called Sunday is Coming. It's on my new album. And there was a line in the chorus where I'm like, it says, Friday's good because Sunday is coming. Don't lose hope because Sunday is coming. Devil, you're done. You better start running. Friday's good because Sunday is coming. And I had some people push back. And when they pushed back, it triggered something that I had a thought about too. It's like, is it weird to sing to the devil in a song, you know, devil, you're done. You better start running. It's like, should we just like, the devil is done, or like death is done. Hmm. Like, let's all start singing or something, you know, like something a little more up. And I thought maybe that there's merit to that. But then everything I tried, all I wanted, I just want to stick a middle finger up to the devil and say, devil, you're done. You better start running, because look what Jesus did. And I'm personally, that was one of those lines where I could have changed it and felt fine with it. But also I'm just like, you know what? If I'm singing this, I'm singing the song a lot, but I'll probably sing it mostly around April when Easter rolls around. Yeah. And I just want to, whether I'm at this church or at a concert, I wanted to say that. And now, honestly, that's the line. If people cheer in the song, jeez, it's that line.
Isn't that cool?
You know, and which is cool, but it's also like you kind of pick your battles and figure out what, you know, like what do I want to carry, but also what can I imagine people carrying?
Well, that's too, I think that's a beautiful part where your artistry actually gets to be a part of it too. You know what I mean? It's not just, I mean, you're not a faceless person sitting in the Brill Building in New York writing songs and it leaves and you never see me. I mean, you are out there singing and leading. So I think it is a beautiful part where you get to sort of go, no, I want to inject some of my, you know, this is me too. Mm-hmm. This is Phil Wickham writing the song. This isn't just a faceless person and this is what I feel. So one of the things that I want to talk about that is we were talking about today, I think is so fascinating, is you had this vocal rest. You know, you had your throat surgery in 14. Is that right?
Yeah, 13 and 14, probably. You're right.
And I can't, I mean, just one, I think, as a man with a job, which is to sing, but also just, I mean, John and I were talking about, as we were prepping for this, like, I can't imagine something that would be more terrifying, honestly, especially from an occupational, but I mean, obviously just speaking, you know, to anyone in general, but, you know, when you're a singer, I can't imagine myself, it just, you know, is this the end? Am I going to sing again? What do I do for work after this? If I don't, I mean, what was that like for you and how did you navigate that season?
Well, there's two things, because now in hindsight, and I think I would have even reacted a little bit different now than I did then, because in hindsight, there's a lot worse diagnosis you can get in a hospital room than you got a polyp on your vocal cord. Right, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I don't want to like negate like the drama of that time. But in hindsight, I'm like, you know, I don't want to also be too dramatic when I tell the story, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of that's how I felt, you know, like I was sitting there, I had to cancel a tour. I was 3 days in. The promoter said, this is embarrassing. You can't sing any of the songs. I'm like, I don't know. It was gone. I couldn't do it. I didn't even talk. I was like, I don't know what's wrong, you know? I went and got it checked out, polyp on the vocal cord. Jeez. What does this mean? Let's put you on vocal rest is what they said, with steroids for a month, no talking, no singing. Let's see if it goes down, because we'd rather not do the invasive thing, which is surgery. It's like they take it out and flap over the skin and it's got to heal perfectly. And if there's any scar, you guys know, if there's any scarring, then it can alter your voice. And there's been times when it's gone bad, but the tech. So pretty much they said, like, let's not even talk about that. Anyways, went through a month, no talking, no singing, nothing changed. Talked on it for 2 days, went back in. And then they said, oh, it's actually bleeding down your throat.
Oh, gosh.
Like, okay. Like, and they're like,
and that's like, not
that's,
good.
That's probably, that's probably that gurgling I've been hearing every time I talk, you know?
Yeah.
And so they did surgery, or they said, we got to do surgery. And then it's like, okay, what does this mean? And, you know, they give you the word, like, well, here's the worst. It's like, it heals bad. And scarring doesn't vibrate and you kind of lose control over your voice. You probably would still be able to sing, but it wouldn't be something you like could, like, you know, it would probably alter, like, you actually recording records. You might not have that voice anymore. Jeez. Or something. Like, gosh, that's a big deal. And then they're like, and also it often endurance, it can like mess up with endurance on the road. It's a healing process, you know, and we've got to see where it is after that. And so that was there's some fear in that. But also I'm pretty like cerebral. I'm not like, I can kind of logically think through it. You know, I'm just like, you know what? They didn't say I have a tumor in my throat. You know, they didn't, there's worse things that could have happened. But in the silence of that next 2 weeks before the surgery and then a month after, no talking, no singing. And also with that going on in my mind, that was kind of beating me down. And also during the recovery of the surgery, I made a horrible decision to binge, Breaking Bad, which I'd never seen before. And so I couldn't even, I was like to the third season. I was like the most depressed
just
guy. Just a dark time. Silent in the back room, binging Breaking Bad, like wondering if I'm going to ever be able to sing again. You know, I don't tell that to everybody, but that was how I was passing the time, because I couldn't. My wife was like, the kids are just crying because you're not talking to them. Can you just go away? It was kind of a hard. The whole thing was just hard, you know.
Yeah.
Not really. She's not that sweet. She's like, it would help me if you would just be She wouldn't say just go away. She's very sweet and awesome. Yeah. We're still married. 15 years.
Good.
And so, anyways, so in the dark, really was this growing thing. Was like, I wouldn't have put this the right way, but I was really was kind of getting bitter. And also really feeling loss of, like, not the voice itself, but of, like, I realized how much I really love people applauding. I really love having something people saying I'm good at. I really love standing out. I love knowing that I'm doing something that feels important.
Yeah.
I love people telling me that it's like, kind of had fallen in love with that. Like, this is who I am. This is what makes me special.
Wow.
This is what gives me value, which is kind of, I think, obviously that's how I would feel in my mind, but I never really pinpointed that. I'd always kind of classified it as like, man, this is ministry and this is great and I'm doing this for the Lord. But like, man, after you have some time to think about it, I wasn't even being honest with myself. But now in retrospect, it's like, I was getting this really bitter, depressed thing because like, what if I don't have that anymore? What if I'm like, got to go sell real estate after this or something, you know? And I'm just like another real estate agent. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's actually would be probably pretty fun. But it wouldn't, feel like it wouldn't make me the artist that I am, you know, be a guy with a job. And so I was really feeling like that sense of identity being gone, which I still wouldn't have felt that. I wouldn't have known how to say that, but I know that now that's what I was feeling. And then this group of people that get together, it's called Catalyst. It's a big conference of church leaders. I was supposed to lead worship at it, and they found out what happened, and they said, hey, can you write a letter? We'll read it from the stage and we'll pray for you. I'm like, okay, that's sweet. And so I'm just going to do like the boilerplate, like, guys, it's all good. God's in control. We'll be back next year. Just thanks for your prayers. Mm. And then he texted me while I was writing that paragraph. And he said, oh, just to let you know, the conference theme is identity. And like, I read that and I stepped back and like, it was one of those moments.
Wow.
Maybe three in my life. Three times in my life where I felt like it was so holy, like so burning bush. I'm in the presence of God. I almost was like really, really, really heavy weight of God's presence. And it's not something that I would say lightly. I'm not like, it's not something I say every time I lead worship, this is what happens. You know, it was really like, I remember thinking like, I never doubt that he exists again. Like, I was just like, this is crazy. I'm aware of him so highly. And I started crying.
Man.
Like, and fell to my knees in this back. No one was there. It was just me. And like, I'm not being dramatic. I would not dare to get off my knees. It was like that kind of feeling. It was crazy. And I grew up in church. I'd never felt this before. And I remember having this real strong sensation that I was being asked a question, like, who am I? And I was like, God, who am I? You're God. Like, who am I to you? Like, your Father. And like, when I said that, it was like, I said the right thing. And then, it's like, what does that make you? And it's like, it makes me your son. I got these pictures. Guys, I'm not joking. I got these pictures of all these memories that I didn't know I had, of like being with my kid at the park and my kid being born and all these different things and my emotions in that moment and my pride and like this person, this girl, Penelope, is going to be loved no matter what. She is my kid no matter what. She's welcome in my house no matter what. She is a Wickham no matter what. And I'm just like, and it's like, you are mine no matter what. This is who you are. The things I've given you to do, who cares if that changes? As they funnel it all through, like, you are loved and forgiven and set free and you will be with me in heaven. And like, just say yes, because I've got an amazing plan for your life. Just say yes to the thing that put, and I know. And I'm just like, this is crazy. And from that moment on, I had this crazy joy in my heart, because I knew God was going to do something special. I knew if he was, I didn't know if he's going to, he might, I might never speak again. Who knows? Like my throat might fall out. I don't know. I don't think that happened. Think you died.
We're no doctors then, here.
Yeah, no doctors here, but you might need a throat. And then I just was so excited because it's like, wow, either you're going to cause this all to be healed and you're going to give me a lot of time off to like grow, or you're going to have it healed quick and I'm going to be back out there singing about you, or I'm not going to have a voice to sing anymore. And you've got this amazing other thing in my life. And you're like, I'm just resting in you. And this is like, and that was a real turning point for me, and not an immediate thing, but like, even you can even hear in my songs and what are like, and the way I wrote, the way I toured, the way I talked to people, the way I talked to God, it was like, that was a hinge point for me, to really, start living out of a joy and out of like a, out of a excited to sing about Jesus and less excited and like not really trying to prove myself as much and getting my eyes off myself and not working out of a place of insecurity, but working out of a place of just excitement for what God's going to do. And that, so that's been a growing thing in my life since then, but it really set me on a new trajectory. And that was before, the record I have called Living Hope. And so then Living Hope and then Hymn of Heaven came out, and then my new one, just I Believe, came out. And really there, I think there's even a clear sense of, it's cool that God started expanding more of what was underneath my feet and my hands to take care of from that moment on too. And so it's just, it's all, so now I'm just eternally thankful for the moment, for that season of silence, I'll call it.
Yeah.
Because God really spoke in a huge way. And it was like, I wasn't born again in that moment, but something was renewed and it's like on its right direction that it never was before.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I talked a long time.
No, that was great. Incredible.
Boom. Dave. John. Boom. Boom. John. John. Yeah. And we're going to, I want to get deep here quickly. Okay.
Okay. Right off the top.
Tell me one of your deepest desires. Can you do that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is so deep though.
Okay. Okay.
Are you ready to go deep?
Yes.
I'd have to say that it's that I wish I had visibly thicker hair, and I wonder that if maybe stress might be causing my hair to thin.
Or
gosh, that's so vulnerable.
I know. I appreciate that. Let's stay there. Don't get out of it. Okay. What if thin hair is causing you distress?
It's a real chicken and egg scenario there. I suppose there are multiple causes of hair thinning, but what can be done,
John,
Dave?
John, I'm not going to keep telling you this because I'm getting more frustrated. Would you just try Nutrafol, okay? Nutrafol addresses key root causes through a whole body approach to hair health.
You know, that's true, Dave. I already knew that.
Oh.
I also knew that Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, clinically shown to improve hair growth, visible thickness, and strength. And you know I love strength.
Well, I had a lot of visible thickness in college that I was trying to get rid of. It was tough. Nutrafol's physician-formulated hair growth supplements use science-backed ingredients. Their drug-free, patented technology provides consistent, reliable results.
Now, Dave, did you know that hair thinning is different for men and women?
Ooh, I did not know that.
Yeah, Nutrafol has multiple unique formulas to provide exactly what their body and hair need to grow based on their biology, age, and other lifestyle factors.
I did not know that, John, I'll be honest. But I do know this. You can go to Nutrafol.com to take their health wellness quiz, identify causes of your thinning hair, and Nutrafol will give you a personalized plan for better hair health through whole body wellness.
And you know what? While you're there, take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code DADVILLE.
Find out why over 4,000 healthcare professionals recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code DADVILLE.
That's Nutrafol.com, promo code DADVILLE.
Johnny, can you hear me?
David, can you hear me?
John.
Oh, Dave.
You and I have both enjoyed reading our copies of the new books from Zondervan Bible Publishers, Flourish, the NIV Bible for Women, and Rooted, the NIV Bible for Men.
Yes, we have, Dave. These two books are designed to help you connect with your identity in Christ.
Features include myth articles that expose commonly accepted myths of our culture and refute them with God's Word.
Mm-hmm. Also, there are profiles of men and women of the Bible, notes that offer clarity into the attributes of God, and questions for growth that you can answer alone, with a friend, or in a small group.
These are Bibles that offer the knowledge, strength, and clarity to navigate life's challenges with Scripture as your guide.
And Flourish, the NIV Bible for Women, and Rooted, the NIV Bible for Men, are available both in hardcover and leather soft styles.
Your hair has always been leather soft to me, John.
Just, thank you.
I felt like I needed to say that. Just
well, and your chest is like a hardback cover.
You know what? No, don't take that back. That means
I wasn't about
to.
Okay.
We need to finish this ad. Find out more and order your copy at amazon.com/rootedandflourish.
That's amazon.com/rootedandflourish.
I think about this a lot, like more and more as I'm getting older. The gift of something like that, like a situation where something is a really big thing in your life, which again, you humbly acknowledge that there are much worse diagnoses to get in a hospital room, which is very true. But as musicians here, we all know, like, what you went through with your voice, that's super, super scary. So what a gift it is to have something huge in your life that is tied so closely to your identity. And we all know it shouldn't be and all that kind of stuff, but you, no one can fault you for it being tied up in your identity. To have that temporarily taken away so that you can get to the point where you're like, okay, I've learned this lesson and I can go forward with whatever happens. Those sort of like near-death experiences, if you will. Like the life after that is such a gift, you know? That's such a gift that you had that in that way, you know?
I've considered a gift. It's cool to look back on that time and consider it a gift now. And also, I like what you touched on because this is something I've thought of and spoken of a lot, but I didn't just now, is that like, it's not that, you were talking about like what we do, like we are singers. That's part of who we are. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's like my only identity isn't Son of God, but for that to be like the highest identity that the other things funnel through and the motives of using everything, like that changes the motives of everything else, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so like you're a singer, we're singers. What we do is a big part of, we're created to do things. We're humans, you know, created to create. And that's part of who we are. And like, so, yeah, we are. I am a singer. I am a worship leader. I am a dad. I'm a husband. But like for the motive not to be like, I am these things so that people will like me. Mm. It's like, no, right. I am these things out of like an overflow of who I know loves me. Mm. And I know why I'm doing all these other things. You know, it's real. It's like, it frees you. It frees you to do Psalm 23:1. It frees you to really live under the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Mm. Like you are in control. You are leading, you are guiding, you love me. I'm going to let you do that. And I'm going to really lean into that and say like, so honey, my wife, like I can listen to you and hear you. And I don't need anything back from you. I'm just here to serve you and to love you. And like, I don't need to right now get my point across. Like, I just want to hear what you have to say, even if it hurts right now, or like, or job or ambition. Like I don't, to be able to lay those things down at the feet of the one who says, I know what the green pasture is for your heart. I created your heart for this pasture over here. Let me lead you to it. Cause you're going to realize that's where you're supposed to be. You know, I know you have ambitions for this, but let me lead you. Cause I'm going to lead you to the quiet place where you find rest. I'm going to lead you. Like, you don't have to want for anything when you let me be your shepherd. And to let him be your shepherd, you have to trust who he is, and to trust who he is, you have to know who he is, and know he is, you have to read about Jesus. And then you're like, wow, like, how could I not, you know? And so, So it's coming from this place of like, oh, I am your sheep. Like that's who I am first. I'm like, I'm going to let you lead me. I'm going to let you guide me, let you love me. And I'm going to trust that you are doing it the right way. But I also like, I have a pretty. I can bat pretty good. Like bat like a shit. That's my joke. Like singing. Right. That's a bad joke. Sorry. Right.
That was, yeah. That was a bad
dad
joke.
Alert.
That was a dad joke.
Bad joke.
Okay. So speaking of being a dad, you are a dad. Am I correct on this? You are a dad four times over?
Yeah. Four.
Yeah.
Penelope, Mabel, Lottie, Henry. Right now they're 12, 10, 8, and 6.
And you know all their names. So what was
I do.
What was the hardest? Going from 0 to 1, 1 to 2, 2 to 3, or 3 to 4?
0 to 1 was the biggest.
Isn't that
jolt,
amazing?
Life jolt.
Really? That's amazing. The just that.
I would say
four.
It's the hardest, but 0 to 1
was the biggest
was like,
shift.
Yeah, 0 to 1. It's like all of a sudden, like we can't go see a movie whenever we want.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, like I am at the mercy of someone else, completely, like at their beck and call. You know, like anytime. All of a sudden, like I thought I was a good husband, but now like I've got to step it up, or else I am like leaving my wife high and dry.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
I got to get up at 2 a.m. You know, so that was a big deal.
So one of the things that's so cool about your story, and I love hearing you talk about your parents, is that you know you speak so fondly of them, and sadly that's not always true. You know, just in anybody's lives, but even as we have dads on. You know, that those relationships can be very tentative and tenuous. What is it, how is that informed, you know, with parents that you have such respect and love for and you're still in community with? How has that informed you being a dad when you think about them and how they parented you and still do with you?
I think the biggest thing for me is that my parents were consistent and faithful followers of Jesus, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like they never gave me a reason to not believe in
what
Jesus.
Great,
they never gave
great.
Me a reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not, they weren't perfect, mm. but like, mm. I just have, that's it. When I think about them overall in my heart, I have this sense of like, they really love Jesus and they really want to follow him and they want to do right. They want to be righteous and holy. And they want to do the things that will bless God's heart. Like,
yeah.
I don't doubt those statements I just made about my parents, mm-hmm. you know? And so like all the specific, I don't even remember how my parents parented, you know, like, I guess I could tell you specific stories. Like, I don't really, it's all a fog, but
right.
I have this sense that they really love Jesus.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And it, nothing they've done has shaken that in me. And that's a big responsibility. But for my kids to overall look back and have this sense of like, man, my dad, you know, people in the Christian world knew about my dad.
Hmm.
But I'm so like, that's who it was off stage too,
yeah.
would be, that's like my goal in life with them. You know, I like,
yeah.
obviously I'd like to be thought of, hope they think I was patient with them and that I was present, which I not always am. With an iPhone in my hand, you know, and all that, but I try to be, but yeah, I think just giving them a reason to think like Jesus is legit and he's worth following.
This is such a beautiful quote. And I just want to say it again, cause you said it and I wrote it down cause I think it's so powerful, but you know, they never gave me a reason not to believe. If there's any encouragement to people who are listening now, we really do these. Like all of a sudden, this is turning like the most Christian podcast of all time. If we have any listeners out there, if you're driving in your van and you are overwhelmed,
yes.
but I do think I do want to say this just to encourage people who are listening. I think one of the great things about this day and age with parenting is there's a million ways to be good at it. There's so many great books. There's amazing podcasts. There's sermons. There's workshops. There's all the things that we can do to have access to being better parents, which is a real gift to our generation, I think, is all this access to great, wonderful knowledge and wisdom. But I think at the end of the day, I feel this about my parents too. Like anytime people ask me like, you know, what is it like? Because my dad was a preacher and, you know, like what was that like? Was it bad? Was it good? The thing that I'm so thankful that I can say is they just lived this really functional faith. Like I just saw my parents live this thing out that I thought, that just seems right. You know what I mean? Like it just feels like it fits in the world really well. And it wasn't, I mean, you know, there were profound things they taught me and there's a lot of wisdom they passed down. But I think at the end of the day, I just so resonate with what you said. They just never did anything that made me think like, this is junk, man. Like you're either hypocritical or, and so I think that is the one thing I want to encourage about this listening. I think sometimes we can overdo this a little bit. You know, we're so concerned with parenting and being good parents and dads and moms that I think is when we're walking our faith out, first with our own faith, working on that and spending our time with the Lord and letting the Holy Spirit do what he's doing, you know, sometimes that's just the most important thing. I think it's just knowing, like, let's just live our faith sincerely, first of all, with the Lord ourselves, and then and it will manifest itself in these beautiful ways. And I think it's easy to get caught up in, like, we're gonna mess it up, we're gonna, but you said it so beautifully, it just never gave me a reason not to believe. And I think that's a great sort of thing to remember as we're parenting, you know. Sometimes it's easy to just, you know, am I doing the checklist, am I doing the things, are they, and it's like, you know, sometimes it's just that simple, you know, which I think is beautiful. It's a great point.
Yeah, I hope they take that away from me as well, you know. That's all I could ask for, and all my imperfections. And don't you guys hate, like, those days where you get in bed and you're kind of running through the day, you're like, oh crap, you know.
Oh dude,
you're just like, what, like, why did I do that? Your kid totally didn't deserve to get chewed out the way you did, but you had something else on your mind. Yeah. You're like, can you stop yelling at me? You know, like, just like, you're like, why did I yell? Like, I didn't need to yell. Like, that was crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just the worst. My oldest daughter is getting to an age now where, like, when she was, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, it was like, I could have some kind of spat like you're talking about, where, like, I went to level 10 immediately, and then I apologize, and then she's fine. And then, so there was never, I was never putting them to bed where she's still mad at me or whatever. It's like, she's moved on. She doesn't even remember. Now we're past that now. Hmm. Now we're at the age where, like, this actually just happened last night, where she got a little upset with me around bedtime, and she asked me to leave the room. Like, I was like laying with her in bed, and she was like, would you just leave the room? And so I left and I had to go to bed, actually. And then we had, like, our small group at our house, which I'm like, I should not be hosting a small group in my house. You guys should be doing an intervention with me on being a terrible dad. But when you have to go to bed and you got to just, like, there's nothing I can do, I just have to sleep here all night long and then see what she's like in the morning. It's so rough.
Hope she's home in the morning. She may have left. She is carpetbagging across the South.
I know.
On the back,
it's
of trains.
So hard.
That feels like when, I mean, that same sort of coming of age is like, I remember when our oldest, the first time that me and Annie were, like, having a disagreement, you know, pretty heated disagreement. And he looked at me, he's like, Dad, why is your face doing like this? And I was like, my face doesn't do it. You know, it was like,
that's what daddy's face does when other people are wrong.
I just thought, oh no. Oh no. They're at that age. Dad, why are you so mad at mom? I was like, oh no. Is this where we are now? You know,
oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're starting to really be observant of my behavior.
Oh yeah.
They were like,
the
other day, they were like, we can always tell when you're mad because you slam things.
No.
Oh,
God. And that's the government. That's taxes, Dad. It can be anything.
Yeah, just slamming it verbally.
Okay, Phil Wickham, you've given us a lot of your time. You've been so generous. We know that you have a beach to get to, a surfboard to ride. We assume you just surf all day. Actually, what's a typical day for you when you're home?
Today I took my kids to school. Mm-hmm. Got on a podcast with y'all.
You.
Mm-hmm. I have another interview to do after this.
Oh,
and then, I've got a big business lunch meeting, big business stuff.
Business.
I'm always into big business.
You only do the biggest of business.
You love big business.
No, I've got a meeting with my manager, a couple calls to make. I always try to go for a little, like, exercise.
Yep.
Sometimes that is get in the water or go for a run or something.
Yeah.
And then pick my kids up. Man, that's today. Every day is different.
That's a great day. That's a
great
day.
It's a good day. Today's, it's kind of like September for me is like, because August, I was home 4 days in August.
Yeah.
And so September was like, I'm not flying. I'm not flying anywhere. Yeah. I promised my wife, no, I'm not going to, like, be writing songs when the kids are home or anything like that. Yeah. You know, I'm like, and so that's been really sweet. I also got, sorry, podcast, but I got, wait, look at,
you got a tattoo.
Oh, this tattoo.
Look at
and
you.
It says Mallard. It's my wife's name. That won me. I got like 500% credit right now.
She's like you can, like, have so all high. The business lunches you want, sweetie.
No, seriously. I got that it. I don't know. Brandon Lake has, like, he's pretty tatted up.
Yeah.
And he had a friend come to the Dallas show, and he's like, "You should get one." I'm like, "No, I don't. I'm not really that guy."
Is that your first? Like,
it's my first. Oh, that's huge. I'm like, "Well, I guess I've always wanted my wife's name over my heart." He's like, "Bro, you should do it." It was just so Brandon. He's like such an enabler. And I was like, "You know what? I'm going to get it, and I'm going to go home tomorrow. I'm going to show her, and she's going to love it. I know she is." And I did it, and she loved it. And it's like, it's my 15-year. It's my 15-year badge.
Oh, I love that.
I got to say, though, I have 7 tattoos or so, so I know how bad they can hurt afterward. And does your guitar strap not go right over that point on your chest?
You know, it's pretty small tattoo. It's like a name tag, you know, but it's not my name.
Yeah.
And they put that tape over it, you know, that I didn't know existed. But, and so I felt, and I had three nights off, because that was a Sunday and I wasn't playing until Thursday. Okay. And so by Thursday, it actually healed great.
You're safe.
Didn't even peel or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. Thanks for caring about that, though. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very kind of you.
That's what we do at Denzel.
Okay. So, we like to round out the interview with a little speed round. These are just top of mind, whatever comes to your head. I'll ask one. Dave, we'll kind of go back and forth. So your first one is, if you had to go by a stage name from now on, what would the stage name be?
Oh, gosh. That's a tough one. Goodness. Can you? I don't know. Can you guys give me one?
I actually thought about this. This is watch us be back to the beginning here. It has to be something like Black Hawk. There's something about your hair that is so powerful.
I was gonna go the hat and the hair.
Oh my gosh!
The hat. What about
hat and
that?
Hair?
Maybe you do a side project where it's the hat and the hair.
That's your sync project, Phil. That's your gonna be
kind of sick. Honestly, I'm into it. Hat and the hair. Hey guys, what's up? Hat and the hair.
Listen, just have a couple songs.
Hey guys, thanks for coming out to Hat and the Hair Show.
This was just on Grey's Anatomy.
It was their season finale.
Okay, so next question. What is the one song you wish you had written?
One song which, you know what? I'm going to go, this is my brain going more logical. I wish I wrote something like, okay, this is going to be dumb, but it's probably, okay, like All I Want for Christmas Is You, because it comes around every year.
Bro.
And I get like a $2 million royalty check every year.
Bro.
I mean, we've all heard the numbers.
Also, I love Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've all heard the numbers on how much she makes on that one song. They're probably all over the place. Who knows? But it's a lot.
Like that's something you give, or like Rudolph, actually, that's probably too cool of a song. If you wrote like Rudolph.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, and it's like, and so your grandkids are like, your grandpa wrote Rudolph.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's like, yeah. And they're like, yeah, he's actually giving it to me in his will. It's like to be able to bestow Rudolph on
There is some great grandkid living on an avocado farm in San Diego right now whose granddad wrote Rudolph.
Yep.
He's getting $300,000 checks every month.
Every month. Just like,
and his business manager's coming in and he's like, hey, avocado sales were down last quarter. And he's like, doesn't matter to me.
I don't care.
My grandpa wrote Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. We'll be fine. Yeah.
They're at a big business lunch today.
Wouldn't that be kind of fun though? Like every year you like Christmas comes around. It's like, oh, that's the song I wrote.
Go.
You know, you're in a store. So that's kind of fun.
That's
amazing. Yeah.
That's kind of dumb though. That's like the anti-artist.
I like that answer. No, I like that was interesting.
I can tell you're going to a big business lunch. You got business on the brain.
Yeah, big business.
Okay. What song are you most proud of yours?
Oh, that's a good question. That kind of changes, I think. But I think the last couple of years, proud of wouldn't be, I almost would rather ask, like, use the word thankful, what someone was thankful for.
I told John, Battle Belongs. I'd rather be thankful, but he said proud of. So I was like, okay,
no, I wrote the question.
Okay.
You can't change it.
No, proud is good, but I would almost, because I don't know if I'm the most, I'm probably more proud of as an artist of other songs, you know? Mm-hmm. But thankful for, there's a song called Battle Belongs that came out in 2020 and felt like it was kind of timely for me and my church, but also felt like it really kind of wove itself into a lot of people's kind of faith in the fight, kind of needing that song to sing that in a tough season and a tough time. But even also just seeing it still kind of have the ripple effect on these worship nights we just did in August, and just seeing people It just seems to be the catalyst of like really special moments live too. The catalyst for moments of faith, moments of praying, moments of calling people into, you know, believing that God is bigger than the things they're going through right now. And so that song's been a huge encouragement to me. Caused me to write a devotional book.
Jeez.
That ended up doing a thing too. It just like has been a big part of my life. So, yeah, so I'm thankful for it.
Yeah. Okay, final question. What song would you, and I'm actually going to open this up to any song because then it does it, and you can say your own too, but it, then it's like you really can choose. What song would you be happy to never have to play again?
Happy to never have to play again.
And that doesn't mean
this is amazing. This doesn't mean you don't
like it. Isn't that funny? Yeah. That's all like, yeah. You know, you just kind of.
I think, well, I'm only saying that because like, now it's like we're trying to find. It's been out for a decade.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and so now we're trying to figure out just where to put it in the set because I think people want to hear this still, right? But then we like I'll just do it late, like on the summer worship nights. I just did a chorus of it in an acoustic moment, and no one complained.
Yeah,
about that. So I'm like, I think people just can like just in the back of their mind sing the song when they go home from the concert if they want. You know.
Yeah.
I've played it. I've just sung it. Thousands of times probably by now. And I'm sorry. Here I am.
Just like let's
not
sending it out. And
I'll do this one all the time.
What podcast would you be happy to never do again?
Oh my gosh, you're John. Right? What kind of podcast you wish you could never have to do again?
We are.
Phil, you are
okay.
You don't do that. Don't. We are. Listen, yes.
Are
buddies.
You Franklin
as of today,
or
we are
we're
considering
in Nashville.
Us. Yeah, yeah. We're in the San Diego of Tennessee, as they say it so eloquently here. Nice. We're both Nashville. In fact, we live literally across the street from each other.
Have you ever done that on the podcast? Can you do it? And I'll talk with John for a second. This is gonna
I
be
can
so
be a
sick.
In like 20. 10.
That would be no.
Okay.
But now,
okay. I'm gonna. I'm looking at the clock. I see it. I see the recording clock.
Yes. Hold, please.
Dave, okay. Do it.
11:06.
Let's start this.
Start the timer right now.
And go. Okay, 20. Yeah, this actually happened one time when we were in the middle of an interview. And before the interview, I got one of those like software update things where it was like, do you want to update your software? And I was like, try in an hour.
Right,
and
in the
then an
the
hour later, we're in the middle of the interview and my computer just goes dark.
Oh, that's so funny.
And it's just like starting the update. And I was like, oh my God.
He's almost 40 seconds
in. I did
in.
What Dave is doing right now. I'm just sprinted
John,
over
John, it's
Dave's
an honor to talk to
you.
Oh.
Hopped in. He's pushing.
That was actually
40 seconds.
Incredible. 40 seconds.
And here he is. How long do you think it took you, Dave?
Well, I have to say a couple things really quickly. One, I shouldn't have worn Birkenstocks. That was shooting off my feet.
You could have shaved off 10 seconds
and
if
two,
you wore different shoes.
The guys who were building the house next to me were definitely judging.
That was actually amazing, though.
There was like four guys out there meeting, and I was like, hey, guys, okay, just running,
guys,
sprinting to the neighbor's house.
You guys heard a podcast?
God.
It's an honor to talk to you guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
Same.
Dude, thank you so much. All the best to you. And we'll hang.
And this may be awkward where it sits here because I have to end it at my house, but we love you either way.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to go close the big business deal.
No, you should get out of here and then we'll figure out what to do.
You get to that business lunch and you close that deal.
All right. See you, bye. I'm not sure I know how to close it.
Yeah, please do. Thanks,
see you, man.
Great hanging. Dadville.